Okay, I'm Chris White. I'm one of the elders here at Southwood, and I'm going to start off with a fun little icebreaker. Are you an olive person? So same people you prayed with, look at them, give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Are you an olive person? Okay. So who are my olive people? Okay. We got quite a few. And on pizza, does it matter? Okay, so I even bought an olive branch here on Amazon, but kind of nice. Where am I headed with this? I wonder if you can tell already. But today, we are in the Sermon on the Mount. Let me tell you a little bit about the Sermon on the Mount, even before you turn there. Some of you may already know where it is. But before you do, the Sermon on the Mount was Jesus' longest continuous teaching recorded in the Bible. It was a revolutionary talk, right? When he starts off and he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," you can almost hear these tires screech. Like, wait, what did he just say? You can hear the religious elites saying, wait, what is he saying? What's happening now? What are we doing? Who let him talk? And so this sermon has so much power in it and so much that we're going to unpack. But I'm going to begin with the end in mind, starting with the beginning. Which, does that make sense? I think it does. So we're going to start with the Beatitudes, but notice I'm not telling you blessed are the blank quite yet. We'll get to that in a second. The first one there, I'll just tell you that one. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Again, screech, hard screech. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. We can go on and on. But I want you to think about that question there at the bottom. These are the payoffs. We haven't gone through all of the groups, the eight groups that are blessed. These are the payoffs. Which of those payoffs is different and maybe even best? Think for a second, and you can even kind of brainstorm with your neighbor. Which one of those is best? Which one of those is different from the others? I think somebody got it back there. Okay, so for this one, now think about the first one there. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Okay, I like that. That's a great payoff. I'm not minimizing it. That sounds like more of a kind of an inheritance. They will be comforted. They will inherit the earth. They will be filled. These are all kind of inheritances. But then wait, when we get to number 6, they will see God. And then number 7 should be another tire screech. They will be called children of God. Whoa, that's not just inheritance, that's identity. So you've got 8 payoffs, 7 of which largely deal with the inheritance you can receive, and one of which is more about your core identity. And if you get number 7, the other 7 inheritances kind of come anyway, don't they? And so what group gets this payoff? And by the way, is it irony that it's number 7? Is it coincidence? I don't know, but it's kind of cool that it's also the 7th one. So what group is this? Some of you may know, and you can turn to Matthew 5 if you'd like. Blessed are the, you know it, right? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. I love this verse so much. One of my life verses, one of my favorite verses with what I do for a living. It applies a lot as a consultant, you know, being a peacemaker. I remember doing a family devotion where I said, hey, how can I remember Matthew 5:9? Because you know how sometimes in your head you'll get it like, it's either 5:8 or 5:9. And somebody said, well, you just remember like the song, working 9 to 5 and then kind of flip it. So that'll help you? Okay, there we go. So she'll never forget it now. Matthew 5:9, working 9 to 5. So we're going to zoom in on this word. What does this word really mean? How can we apply it today? Here's the word in the Greek. By the way, who in here was either in a sorority or a fraternity or has taken a math class? Any of the three, raise your hand. Okay. So I'm not going to go through the Greek alphabet, but to me it's kind of fun. Any other math majors in the room besides me? Come on. Nobody? Okay, there we go. Yes. I knew that. So we got the math majors here. You end up learning all the Greek letters if you major in math. Fun fact. I wouldn't do it, but yeah. So you see things like epsilon. That one looks, the first one, like it looks kind of familiar. The easiest one is the one at the end, toward the end, pi. We've all seen that one at least, so that's good. Okay, whew. So there's some that look familiar, but you've got iota and rho and eta and nu. And so we don't need to get caught up in all that, but I want you to think about the two words here in the Greek. The first word, kind of this Irene, and the second word, poios. So anybody know anyone with a name Irene? If you know anyone with the name Irene, that name in English comes from the Greek word right here. So kind of fun fact. You can text them maybe now, maybe later after the sermon. But you can text them and tell them that you learned something today about their name. And then poios, I won't go into the Greek part too much, but I do want to talk about what the words mean in the Greek. What did the word peace mean? Was it this static feeling of contentment? Was it just this happiness? Was it just this absence of conflict? No, it wasn't a static word. It was actually a very active word. It was more about a rejoining, a rebinding, more about a reconciling. Oh, okay, I kind of like that. That gives this peacemaker word a little bit more depth. Bringing together. Okay. Then what about the second word here? What did it mean? Think about this. What if I told you that I'm a runner? And then you said, well, where do you run? What races have you run? And I said, well, I ran around the block one time. You would say, okay, you ran. I don't think I would call you a runner. If I told you I'm a teacher, and you say, where do you teach? And I said, well, last night at the kitchen table, I tutored one of my kids in math. I think they would say, well, you taught, but you're not a teacher. Right? If I told you I'm an author, a writer, and you say, what did I write? And I say, well, I wrote a draft of a blog, haven't published it yet, but I'm a writer. You would say, no, you wrote, but you're not a writer. So notice that ER there at the end. This is more about producing something, bringing something forth, working at something. I love the last word there, pursuing. The word pursue means it's kind of like never ending. So you could paraphrase this verse and talk about blessed are the reconciliation pursuers. I wonder how strong we are at pursuing reconciliation. Today we're going to talk about three ways that we can do that. The first one is in your head, reconciling things in your head, finding peace in your head. The second one, between you and other people, so between you and me. And the third one would be, I'm not even involved. You two maybe have an issue, and I'm the third party. So we'll talk about all three of those. So I did a whole sermon on this one, so I won't belabor this one, but I love Ecclesiastes 1:2. A lot of translations say meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless, and that's a fair translation for the word. I just like what the word really meant in the Hebrew. The root word, what is it the word actually mean? It just meant vapor or breath or mist. And I really like that. I think that really captures the essence. Picture Solomon living this life where he had everything. He tried everything. And what did he say at the end? In the first chapter, verse 2, after a brief greeting, you know what he said? He said, it's all vapor. It's all vapor. It's all chasing after wind. And I want you to think for a minute, what are some of the winds that you chase that can steal your peace? Are there ways you compare yourself to someone else? Are there ways you look in the mirror at yourself? Are there things about your job that you're pursuing? And are those pursuits, by the way, are those pursuits good or bad? Yes, right? I mean, they're not bad. You can have noble pursuits, but are they risky? Are they risky? Absolutely. And so Solomon is reminding us, whatever it is that you fill in that void, if only blank, then I would be happy, then I would feel peace. Solomon is saying, careful, careful. So think about the things you may chase that can actually steal your peace. Think about the things you consume that can steal your peace, right? Especially social media or things like that. What are you consuming, and does some of that ever steal your peace? I love what Solomon also said. This is like, I must get a dollar every time I say Solomon in this sermon because I'd say it a lot. But in Proverbs 4:23, a lot of you know the ending to this verse. If Solomon ever said, above all else, I better hear another tire screech and go, okay, listen up. And what does he say? He says, above all else, guard your heart. So I may let other people steal my joy, steal my contentment. I may let other situations and disappointments or even other people's personalities or their behaviors steal my peace? I've done that
for sure.
So good reminder there that we've got to be careful. So my question to you, and you're going to answer with your little groups there, if you were praying earlier, maybe you had a group of five, you might want to split into like two or three. So if you got a group of four or five, you may want to split up just for the sake of simplicity. But if you've got, you know, kids or something, then obviously do whatever you want. Use your discernment. But the question you're going to quickly talk about with your neighbor, who or what would you say you sometimes let steal your peace? Now, do you need to announce someone's name that steals your peace? I have people in my life that can be challenging. Of course not. Don't point, by the way. Don't point. Don't look at them and say it's you, right? But just talk in general. What are some things that we let steal our peace? 90 seconds with your partners. Go. Ten seconds. Yeah, this is a hard one. Isn't it challenging? Even this sermon itself, you're putting this together, so convicting of some of the things that I let steal my peace. I have a great life. And it doesn't take much to throw me off, right? And so what today could we better protect ourselves from? What things could we let not steal our peace? Great question. So if I told you that one's hard, the next one might be slightly harder, and you saw where I was headed earlier. What about between you and others? And think of this question right there. What's the hardest trait to deal with in others? And I'll tell you what it is. How many of you know someone who likes pineapple on pizza? Yeah. I am sorry. I am so sorry. How many of you are the ones that like the pineapple on pizza? Okay, we got an aggressive group. They were just waiting to pounce. Yeah, that's a hard one. So we need to pray for those people that just whooped and raised their hands. Or another one is, you know, liking glitter. Some of you have friends or family that likes glitter. How many of you know someone that likes glitter? Yeah, I'm so sorry. How many of you are the glitter lovers? Okay, not too many. That's okay. I have some reticent hands now. They don't want to get on the prayer list. You know, Jesus did not say, let your glitter shine. He said, let your light shine. Same chapter, by the way, Matthew 5. But on a more serious, oh, actually, before we get to our more serious note, one other area that's tricky to deal with, you know, what if you live with someone and you're more, tidy and organized and they're a little more free flowing, and that person's in the room. So these slides are shown with full permission. So here we go. Who has ever dealt with something like this? Who's ever dealt with something like this? Yes. Okay, now we're going to start a prayer group for this one. We're not just talking about it. But it gets worse than this. I mean, what I don't understand, though, is there's a trash can in the picture. You know, get the dopamine hit and replace it. Like, I'll let you have it. You can have the dopamine hit. But it gets worse than this. You think I'm making this up? You think this is Photoshop? No. I could not will myself to the dark depths of this kind of mindset to even make up something like this. No. So how do you fix it? Well, you try to do things to help avoid this becoming an issue. So it feels like sandpaper, but it lasts 3 months. I don't even care. I don't even care. Okay, fine. We didn't do that, but we did do this. Double roll, baby. Double roll. That way we reduce the conflict in our marriage by at least 50%. Wait, as long as you use the right side up, you don't just use whatever side you want. I have to like hide the tab on the left and the back and duct tape it down just to make sure. And then again, use the right side up and somebody get the dopamine hit. I'm not crazy here. Right, Brad? I'm not the one crazy. So I say this very playfully, but before I finish up this little segment, one time I decided I'm not going to change it. I just want to see what would happen. Like, what's going to happen? What are they? Someone lives here. Someone, and here's what happened. Here's what happened. And again, you think I staged that? You think I made that up? I could not even make that up. And so, whenever I talk about this, every once in a while, someone might even say to me, "Hey, careful." Kind of, you know, making fun of your wife, especially, you know, from a stage somewhere. I think it's pretty clear who I'm making fun of. I hope it is. You know, who's the one you have nothing better to do than to take pictures? That's your biggest stressor in life? That's what steals your peace? Is that? So no, I'm definitely making fun of someone, but it's not her. It's not her. And speaking of that, what if I told you someone else in our church, I was telling this story, and someone else in our church told me how they handle it. And when they told me, I went, whoa, like really? So I was being funny earlier, now I'm kind of being serious. Like, so I could say their names right, Walt and Melissa. They said they have the same issue. You know what they do? They make it a game. They make it a game where they take the empty roll and they'll put it somewhere else funny so the other person can find it. And while they do that, I even did it to my wife yesterday, her like medicine bottle. And I'm over there kind of smiling, kind of trying to like hide it. And guess what I'm doing though? I'm smiling. I'm not sitting there in judgment, annoyed, perplexed, disappointed, taking pictures. So like here's an example of how they did it, right? So she hid it there, and he finds it. He's laughing. He does the same. I wonder if some of us don't see our differences clearly. I wonder if some of us let differences steal our peace. I wonder if you know someone in your family or a roommate, a sibling, who's wired differently from you, and we let that steal our peace. Maybe you're more driven and someone you live with or work with is more laid back. To you, I would say, careful, careful, careful. Maybe you're more nurturing and sensitive and you live with or work with someone who isn't as nurturing or sensitive. To you, I would say, careful. Right, are we trying to change someone else? Is that our goal? Is that what we're trying to do? And I wonder, what could Scripture speak to here to help us with that? You know, I won't read the whole section because it's long, but, you know, 1 Corinthians 12 talks about the different parts of the body, right? The ear can't say to the hand, I don't need you. It says here on the screen, but in fact, God has arranged the members of the body, every one of them, according to his design. Whoa, okay, so it's less about me trying to fix someone that I'm married to and more about me saying, if I'd married somebody like me, we would have a very, very tidy and unwelcoming life. Think about that. Think about that. I remember talking about this once with an audience, and someone came up to me afterwards in tears. It was actually a little, not like awkward, like, oh, you threw me off. I just wasn't expecting it. And she just said, I've got three young boys, one, three, and five. They're all messy, and my husband doesn't help, and it just drives me crazy. But she just felt so convicted, not that she needs to just let the house be a wreck and put up with whatever. That's not what this is saying. This is saying, are you seeing clearly? Are you seeing how some of those personality differences makes the body better? And instead, we want them to be like us, or at least within proximity. So that's a really challenging one where we need to celebrate those differences. Think about this next question. How patient are you? If you want to be a peacemaker between other people, how strong is your patience? So you're going to give yourself a number, 1 to 10. A 10 would mean I have worked on this. I let God, you know, work through me, and I'm perfect on patience. Okay, probably not any of those. I know I'm not. An 8 or so would be saying, okay, I'm pretty patient. Like, hey, I'm not a lot of things, but I'm definitely patient. A 5 or a 6, more in the middle. So it depends. 1 or a 2, oh, man, that's tough. especially with our inner circle, right? You can think about that group maybe. So just kind of give yourself a loose number there. And I won't make you share the number, but just make sure you have a single number in your head. So here's how we're going to do this one. The same group you talked to a second ago, right, that you kind of brainstormed with about the question on the screen, you're not going to say anything, but you're just going to look at them when I say go. And if your number was between 0 and 7, so kind of toward that middle to lower end on patience, you're just going to blink. That'll be their subtle clue that you're working on this. Okay, so look at your neighbor, and blink to tell them you need to work on your patience. Okay. What a great way to be open and honest and so subtle. Well, I wonder where the Bible speaks to patience. How do we raise that number? How do we build our patience? Well, check out this verse. A person's blank yields patience. A person's blank, well, you tell me, what is it? I want more patience. The person's blank yields, produces patience. What is it? A person's wisdom yields patience. I believe that even in my marriage, I have more wisdom now to be able to see some of those differences a little more clearly. As I've aged, I feel like I can see things. It's not that I'm always patient, right? But a person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook a toilet paper roll, to overlook an offense, right? And we say that kind of playfully. A topic like this that can feel kind of heavy, I'm okay with a little bit of levity. But think about that verse. How strong are you at even just overlooking certain offenses? Again, not to enable someone, but really just to not be swept into that, to not be overcharged and judgmental. I bet you know the answer to the next one. What starts with an E and causes a lot of conflict? What starts with an E and starts a lot of conflict? Whisper the word to your neighbor. I bet you know it. It's a long word, starts with an E. You got it? No? Okay. Expectations, right? I think my expectations on how you should, even this week, we have some kids that were home from college and whatever else, and I work from home, and I keep the kitchen and all the area, tidy. And I come home, and there's just backpacks and stuff and a package somebody opened and left the package and the stuff and their keys. And I'm just like, what are we doing? Are we living like animals here? And again, I have a choice there. How calibrated are my expectations? Would you say they're calibrated well? No. That if you're expecting people to show up at a house and everybody to put things up, guess what life you're going to live? A very disappointed life. So what are we doing? I heard the phrase once, expectations are premeditated disappointments. And so be careful there that we're not setting ourselves up for disappointment with these expectations that aren't even fair to the other person, that we're imposing on them, that aren't even divine. They're just our flesh, our preference, our style, that we want them to be a little bit more like us. Okay, this one I told you the first one's hard. I told you the second one's even harder. Well, there's one more part to this one that's really hard too. What about going first? Let's say to be a peacemaker, at times I may need to go first. Now, should go first mean I apologize, I was completely wrong, I know I'm a mess? Well, I didn't say any of that, but maybe even just looking at your part and owning your part first, even when it's smaller? Oh, that's hard. Whoa, slow down, right? That's not easy. That road is narrow. That road is difficult, as it says later in the Sermon on the Mount. So going first, as I was preparing this, like I said earlier, it is very convicting to prepare a sermon on a topic like this. And I did think of someone in my life that I hadn't spoken with in, I'll just say, many months. I'll be vague here on purpose. And I thought, you know what? I'm gonna text him. I'm gonna text him. So on Friday, I did. And then you got to be careful when you text somebody and there's been some challenges. You say too much or you say the wrong thing, you can make it worse and get in some text battle. All I said was, would love to catch up soon. Like, I try to just keep it as nice but also brief as possible. Haven't heard back. So was that text a success or a failure? Think about the answer to that. I know someone in our church, actually one of the leaders in our church, that had an estranged relationship actually with the parent and hadn't spoken in years. And they just thought, you know what? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna make it happen. And so they knew where the parent was and took one of their sons that was old enough to handle, you know, kind of the depth of the situation, whatever else. And they just got in the car and started driving. And they got to the door and they knocked, and it never opened. Was that trip a success or a failure? I would say both were successes. What does it say in Proverbs 12:8? If possible, 12:18. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. To me, that son showed an amazing amount of courage. That was a success, to have the courage to say, "I'm going to get in the car, son. Let's go and let's see if we can't be a peacemaker." And think of the baggage set aside that day. Think of the family dynamics shifted. Think of the generational curses broken that day. That trip was a success, but it was a hard trip. So think about that. Are you willing to go first? And sometimes, you know, I have a little prop for this too. How many people does it take to help move things forward when there are challenges, when there is conflict? Is it one? Is it, no, that probably, you know, maybe, is it two? You need both people? No, maybe you need a mediator, and, you know, so, you know, or maybe it's, in, you know, maybe it's eight. Like, you maybe need a lot of people, because you got to have, like, support, whatever else. Is it infinity? I got to get another math reference in there. No, you know the answer. I always get these out of order. It always comes back to one. Most of the time, it just takes one. And most, like I said earlier, most of the reconciliation needs to happen. Much of it is actually right here anyway. I don't need to, you know, if you leave today thinking, oh, I'm going to text someone I haven't talked to in 3 years, and there's layers and layers of conflict, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to live happily ever after, I would say, oh, I hope so. I don't want to set you up for that. What I want to set you up for is what it says right here, that Solomon is saying, just as long as it depends on you, to focus on what you can control. You can't control them, but you can focus on what you can. And focus on gaining wisdom to help with your patience. Okay, the last group here, the third way to be a peacemaker is when we're a third party. I'm going to let this verse kind of speak for itself. There's a lot in here that Paul wrote in Philippians. So Philippians 4, 2, and 3, I appeal to Euodia and Syntyche. I had to look those up. Anybody know how to pronounce that? So I appeal to Euodia and Syntyche to agree in the Lord. Yes, I say to you also, true companion, help them. They have struggled together in the gospel ministry, along with me and Clement and my other co-workers whose names are in the book of life. Man, there's a lot in there. Okay, so I appeal to these two women at the church in Philippi to agree in the Lord. And they're good people, right? Their names are in the book of life. So even like some of us in our families or our workplaces, it's typically good people. And so, number one, it's okay to have some challenges or some conflict. We're normal. It's official. You're normal. But I love what it says here. So first of all, Paul appeals to them to agree in the Lord. And then he says, yes, I say also to you, true companion, help them. Who's he talking to there? Who's he talking to there? We don't know exactly. We can speculate. There's definitely speculation on who it could be. I think it's actually kind of cool that he doesn't say. Maybe he's talking to all of us, saying that, hey, my true companions, if you're in this room, I've probably got higher expectations on you than I do just some stranger or somebody in your family that's kind of a handful or some roommate you have that's, you know, not going to church or whatever, right? I've got more expectations on you, my true companions. And so again, are we saying today, I'm going to start nosing into some conflict. I'm going to start being that peacemaker. Here it comes. Good luck with that. We don't want to force that. Most conflict, there are layers. There are complications. So we want to be careful there. But even as a third party, I want us to step up more. And I've even tried to step more in this way, even recently. And again, doing it with realizing the complexity, realizing the layers, but just seeing if there's anything I can do to help. Okay, so back to you and back to your groups. You know, as you think about the three ways we've talked about today, in your head, between you and others, or as a third party, which one could you focus on more? A couple of minutes, talk to your neighbor. Which one could you focus on more? Ten seconds. Well, as we wrap up today, be thinking about what is your kind of, you know, takeaway, and what is your action? What is God prompting you to do, to think about, to reflect on? In what ways is he helping you see someone more clearly? In what ways is he helping you calibrate expectations? In what ways is he challenging you to be careful what you're consuming that could steal your peace? So make a note of that. Talk about it. Share about it. Let's, as a body, let's help each other better be peacemakers. And as we wrap up today, I want us to think about the ultimate peacemaker. Think about the person who lived a life that we couldn't, who bridged a gap that we never could, and really was that ultimate peacemaker for us. And all we have to do is accept that gift. So whether it's applying something from today or accepting the gift from the ultimate peacemaker, let's do one or the other, I guess, or both. Let me pray for us. God, thank you for verses that challenge us deeply. Thank you for the depth of wisdom in the Bible, God. Thank you for the words that speak to us, speak to our souls, challenge us, convict me. God, thank you for a topic that makes me look around. It makes me look at the ways I lead or don't lead, look at my fears, look at my habits. But again, God, help us, give us eyes to see. Give us eyes to see ourselves clearly. Give us eyes to see others clearly, God, and help us to just apply these lessons. In Jesus' name, amen.